Hey everybody, this is the Drive On Podcast, where we talk about issues affecting veterans after they get out of the military. I'm your host, Scott DeLuzio, and now, let's get on with the show. Hey everyone, thanks for tuning into the Drive On Podcast. Today my guest is Tony Perez. Tony is the General Manager and Vice President of the Security Product Group at GoDaddy. He's also the co-founder and former CEO of a website security company called Sakuri. Tony is also a Marine Corps veteran who did two tours in Iraq. Tony, thanks for joining us on the show. Why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself? And I don't want to give too much about your background kind of in that intro, but why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, for sure. Thanks a lot for having me, guys. I'm really happy to be here to chat with you and your audience about my background and history, and maybe it's helpful to somebody. So as you mentioned, I was in the Marine Corps. I got out as a sergeant back in 2005. The time I was in between 2000 and 2005, I was attached to the 1st MEB that was attached to 1st MARDIV in 2003 when we pushed across the LOD. We did our whole push up to Baghdad, and then I was attached to 11th MU, responsible for Qadisiyah, Karbala, and Najaf provinces. Total in-time country was about a year and three quarters, and then I went back as a defense contractor. So after 2005, I was a defense contractor through 2011, and then in 2011 is really kind of where I got it started with Sakuri. But Sakuri actually wasn't my first start as an entrepreneur. I actually had a WordPress agency, or what you would call a boutique agency, where we would kind of build WordPress-based sites for customers. Since then, as you mentioned, kind of, you know, we grew the company, we ended up exiting it, and I came over to be part of the GoDaddy family. And I like to call myself an intrapreneur now, because I'm part of a big company trying to grow a thing inside, which is an experience in and of itself. But in addition to that, I have also founded another tech startup with my good friend Daniel called Clean Browsing, where we do DNS-based content filtering. But I'm also a off-road racer with DDoS racing team, which you can get into. And then I do some philanthropic work with a lot of veteran-based stuff for one reason or another. So combat vets struggling with PTSD, looking for opportunities. A spiritual resiliency type veteran organization for folks with PTSD as well. I don't know. So that's just kind of a little bit about me, my background.
Yeah, absolutely. That's really great. And actually, so you mentioned Clean Browsing. I'm actually a customer of Clean Browsing. It's a great tool, and I'll definitely put some links to all of the things we're talking about in the show notes. It's really good, especially you know, if you have little kids at home and things like that. You want to make sure that they're not getting onto any of the crap that's on the internet that's out there.
What's funny is that, like, you know, my whole approach with Sakuri and what I did with my first company and then with GoDaddy, like, my general approach to life is kind of like, well, how hard could it be? And it actually always turns out to be harder. And I think that's something that the Marines kind of drilled into us, where we're like, we could do anything.
Sure.
And so Clean Browsing was the same exact concept as Sakuri, where we started building something, and we're like, well, whatever, it's just kind of interesting, and how hard can it be? And we kind of threw it out there, and then it's kind of just picked up a lot of momentum over time, over the past year. And so it was actually kind of cool when I saw you using it. I was like, oh shit, did you know that's us? And they're like, oh no. And so it was just kind of like, you know, it's kind of cool, but it's all based on that same principle of how hard can it be.
Right. No, and it's really great. And it's actually from the user perspective, it's a pretty simple product to use too. So, and it definitely helps kind of lock things down, so kids don't end up on, you know, sites that you don't want them on and all that kind of stuff. So it's really nice. When you were in the Marines, what was your job? What was your MOS? Just kind of like background.
Yeah, for sure. So I was in the O2 field in the Marine Corps. So that's the intelligence, military intelligence. But I specialize in something called geospatial intelligence. So the ability to spatially correlate information, a lot of cartography, surveying, which is really interesting in the time of Afghanistan and Iraq, when we didn't have a lot of data at that time. Try to put yourself kind of 2001, 2002 timeframe, you know, as we were kind of announcing we were going to go to war. Like, we didn't have any information for these places. And so for workups and for headquarters Marine Corps trying to plan, we aggregated and collected a lot of data for these locations. Things are very different today. And so then when, while we were in country, the job kind of switched from we went to creating the data to then working with the various teams, producing products for them while they were going in the field. And we were kind of always attached with them as they were kind of moving. So it was kind of it's a very different configuration today than it was back then. Things were like a bit of a wild, wild west. You kind of like were everywhere. And so that was kind of interesting. So cool. That's what I did.
Okay. Yeah. No, it's nice to have a little background to see, you know, like what, and there's so many jobs out there in the military, especially you don't even know like what the half of it is. And that's one of those jobs I didn't even know was even a thing that the military had, but
yeah,
obviously it is.
Well, and that's that space is where kind of, you do a lot of work with counter intel. You do a lot of work with the guys, you know, say you're doing a high value target or something like that. You're doing a lot of the analysis and recon for that. So it's a pretty interesting gig, and you get to see a wide breadth of the battle space.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome, actually. And that probably helped your mindset in terms of, like, you know, thinking about security related stuff when moving into Sakuri, and you know, when you started going down that path, it might have, you know, kind of helped you with that you know, 30,000 feet overview of, like, you know, what all the moving parts are that could be, you know, going on to affect, you know, website security and stuff that Sakuri is, you know, kind of known for protecting against, I would imagine.
Well, actually not. So it did in probably different ways than you think. So, like, for instance, when I first got out, I was doing a lot of subject matter expertise in geospatial technologies for, like, headquarters Marine Corps, headquarters Army. I was helping design and develop a capital asset system for the country of Afghanistan, working with the Ministry of Defense and Ministry of Interior. And so, like, it wasn't even in the security space per se. I was actually introduced to the team at Sakuri with Daniel through Dre, who happens to be my brother-in-law, who also happens to be the guy that I had started Cubic 2 with, which was the boutique agency. And he actually kind of introduced me to WordPress and kind of this side of the house. What actually did carry over was just I don't know how you would say it. I don't know if it's confidence or inability to, like, appreciate my own naiveness. And so, like, I was just kind of like, it really is. It can't be that hard to run this project. It can't be that hard to build this thing, right? And so I just kind of just threw myself at it the way I had been taught, like, just overcome whatever obstacles. Like, and for me, it's like, there's no obstacle that will stop me. I just have to, like, get over it. I just kind of ran with it that way. Now, what did end up happening is, over time, from a business development or just looking at the landscape, and I started looking the business and the industry we were in as a battle space. And so I would start looking at how our competitors were responding, or what was happening, or trying to figure out what's the right time to respond, or what would they be doing. Or I did start to leverage some of the strategy and the tactics employed for the strategy, based on some of that experience. So it wasn't like it got me into security, but how I looked at the battle space and how I saw that planning did get applied to how I run the businesses then and how I actually run the business today.
That's really interesting. You know, how you're able to kind of, you know, take the business landscape and kind of, you know, mesh that into a battlefield landscape in your head or whatever, while as you're looking at all this stuff. It's that's actually a phenomenal way to look at it, because really it is, in a way, sort of like a battle. There is, you know, you're fighting for, you know, market share and things like that. And you're you know, in some cases you may actually be friends with some of the people that you're competing against, but it's still a battle. You know, someone's going to be the top dog at the end, you know?
Absolutely. And, like, the you know, the Bay Area doesn't like to talk about it that way, right? Like, you know, we have this whole new view of the world and how we communicate, but for me, it's always been like that. It's always been, okay, you know, there's a pull and a push type relationship. And sometimes you make a strategic partnership with somebody that you know is going to cause a problem later, but to get across one thing, or you give up a strategic partnership, understanding that's going to hurt you in the short term for a long-term gain, because you're going a different direction, right? Like, there's this constant kind of pull and push type relationship happening with you in the market and your competitors and the vendors you partner with, et cetera. And that is actually really, really neat, right? And that is some of the things that I did pull away from, like, how do we think about the battle space, and how do we not worry about so much this battle, but how do we worry about or this one fight, but worry about the bigger battle, right? And for right or wrong, that's kind of how I approach almost everything I do.
Well, yeah, and it's a good way to approach things too, is because it's constantly moving you forward, and you're constantly making decisions, right, and like you said, right or wrong. Some of these decisions might be good decisions, some of them might end up hurting you, in the end, but you're making decisions, you're constantly moving, and so, you know, eventually you make enough of these decisions, you're going to be moving in the right direction.
Well, that's actually a really good point. Like, one of the things that I always tell the team, and they kind of like, well, that's a little bit intense, Tony, but I always tell them, it's like, you know, when you're in war, they teach you, you keep moving, you move, mm-hmm. you take cover. And in fact, when you stop moving is when you die. Right. And yep. So like my marketing team would always be like, what the hell, Tony? Or like, but I was like, well, that's the reality, guys. And what we need to do is don't get caught up with this one thing that we did that didn't work. Is you have to continue to evolve. The battle spaces continue to evolve, and you have to evolve with it. What we did yesterday may not evolve. The enemy is getting smarter. The technologies are changing, right? And if the minute we stop evolving, that is when we as a brand will die, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's a lesson that I learned all the way back in my MCI days. You know, I'm up, they see me, I'm down. And they're teaching you the opposite of what normal people do, right? Keep running towards it.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
I always explain, well, that was marine logic, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, and you see that too, even in day-to-day life. This isn't exactly day-to-day life. This is kind of a anomaly that kind of takes place, but there was recently a shooting. I think it was the one that was in Walmart in the Texas, where, and I want to say there was a, and I could be wrong, it could be a different shooting at some point, but there was a soldier who like basically ran towards like where the gunfire was because he saw mm-hmm. like some kid laying on the ground who was bleeding or whatever, and he went to go help. It's like,
you don't think about it.
Normal people don't do that. Like, normal people don't go run towards where there's gunfire and where there's blood all over the place. Like, normal people are not trained to do that. They're trained to run away. But I guess, you know, the military makes not so normal people, you know, and in a way that's a good thing, because if that soldier didn't go after that kid who was bleeding on the ground, you know, that kid may not have made it. And so, in a way, that's a good thing that we have that kind of mindset to keep moving and take action. I think is maybe a better way to phrase it.
Jocko talks a lot about this, actually.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, and it's really good. And if anyone who's listening does not know about this, it's called the Jocko Podcast, and I'm going to have a link to that in the show notes as well. Navy SEAL who talks about a lot about leadership related stuff, and really, really good, really good stories that he tells too. He has other guests on the show that has lots of good stories. So I'll have a link to Jocko in there too.
You know, one thing to note is I think that might be really interesting to your audience. I don't actually talk about it that much, but a lot of people will sit back and say, "Wow, Tony, you've been very successful." You know, they talk about the things that I've done, etc. What we don't actually talk a lot about is, you know, what actually happened when I first got out. Right. You know, if you talk to anybody that I served with, everyone always thought that I was going to be a master guns. So I was an enlisted guy. Right. So my whole thing was I wanted to be a master guns because I wanted to run the troops, do my thing. But I didn't want to do the admin bullshit. I didn't want to do the sergeant major nonsense. And I thought I was a lifer. But in 2005, right, I had spent about a year and three quarters in country, not including workups. Right. And what we were doing there. And when I was coming home, I actually had met my wife, my then girlfriend, now wife. And I got in this really weird mental rut where I felt very disconnected from the world. Like, I couldn't understand why people cared about movies and why people were doing the things. And by the way, one of the things that I did while I was in country was a lot of battle damage assessments. So I did a lot of PSDs, right? Security details. Where we would go out, with the front line, things like that. And then we would go back after we would do a hit and assess the carnage and the damage that had been done, right? Because we'd have to do reports on that from the intelligence side. And so I would come home and I just couldn't connect. I was having a really hard time. And I found myself in this really weird rut where I felt the Marine Corps was pushing me to do things that the Marine Corps wanted. And everybody was pushing me to do something but nothing that I wanted to do, right? And so I ended up getting out. And then for about 4 or 5 years after getting out, I actually struggled really bad. I mean, I went up from 200 pounds to 310 pounds. I started really getting aggressive around me, not being very antisocial, like just getting into stuff, right? And at the time, there was different conversations about it and whatnot. And it actually took a lot for me to it was around 2010 that, I finally started saying, what's going on here, right? Like, what's the issue? And that's where I found Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu to start letting some of that out and just get back into the rut of life. And it was yep. Around that time that I had started Cubic 2, and I was like, that's it. I need to shake myself off this. But it wasn't a matter of me going to counseling. It wasn't a matter of me talking to people. It was a matter of me recognizing that I was going nowhere very fast, right? And it was at that point that I then said, oh, well, let me switch this mindset and apply myself to certain things. And let me just apply the things that I've learned and see what I can make out of it. And that's where, I started competing in jiu-jitsu. And that's where I started, building the company. And I just started throwing everything that I had at the things that I was doing. And then that's when I started to see the return. But it wasn't immediate, right? It was about 6 to 7 years after getting out where I started to see the things that I wanted in life, right? Mm-hmm. I think that's important for people to understand.
Yeah, and the other thing too, kind of along those lines, is that a lot of times people will see someone like yourself who has done well for themselves, built a successful company and all this kind of stuff, and they'll see that and they'll think, oh well, he's an overnight success kind of thing,
because that's right. they want it tomorrow.
Exactly. Yeah. It's the Amazon Prime mindset where they click send and place the order or whatever, and they want it on their doorstep tomorrow morning, right. First thing, so that they can have it. But the reality is that's not going to happen for most people. I would venture to guess that most people that you would see who are successful are not going to fit in that bucket of an overnight, truly overnight success, where really it was just a few days or hours or maybe a couple of weeks or months of work to get to that point. It really, I don't think that happens really to anybody. But like you said, it's something that it's a buildup. It took time. You had to hit a rut and then have to start working your way back out.
I gave a talk I gave a keynote at the Military Influencer Conference last year. They invited me out to give a keynote and talk about my history and whatnot. I think it was well received. And in there, one of the slides I have is I talk about the issue that I have is everyone comes and says, oh my gosh, I want the success that you've had, right? Whether that's money or the flexibility you have in your life, et cetera. And I always tell them, I say, that's great. I can tell you about that. But where I prefer you to focus in is in this section. And I have a chart and it says, you see this section? You see where I had to zig, where I had to zag, the emotional toll that took, the personal challenges you had with your family and your friendship and the dynamics you go with building a team. Like, let's talk about those, right? Because these little moments of success, they go away. And in fact, once you sign a deal and you do an acquisition, there's no fanfare, there's no balloons, okay, it's done, that's it. Everybody, oh, congratulations, and then they move on. What you need to focus on is really like the work that it takes to get there, right? So for instance, Sucuri, right? So, Daniel started building that in 2008 in his garage and his part-time. We started in 2010. We didn't really get going in terms of getting really good movement on that till about, 2012, 2013. Then we got a lot of momentum, right? Clean browsing. Clean browsing is another great example of, we started talking about this in 2016. Started building it. We didn't really open it until summer of 2018. Like, there is a journey in everything you do. And if you're only focused or looking at purely at that shiny object at the end, you're never going to get there. Daniel and I, for instance, we focus in the grind. Like, we like to joke and we says, well, where we thrive, the things we like to discuss are the day-to-day things, the 24-hour days that we're spending, the late nights. People ask me today all the time, like, well, Tony, how the hell are you running the group at GoDaddy, running clean browsing, doing your philanthropic work, racing a Jeep and riding horses and snowboarding and going and shooting guns? And I'm like, well, that's my life. That's what I enjoy doing. And so my day is built up of doing all kinds of different things. But for me, I'm constantly moving. My biggest fear is not moving. My biggest fear is letting that catch up to me and dying, right? Like, and so for me, I have to continue to move and do different things And that's how that's what I have found to keep me from getting into the rut. Because even today, even after the many years that I've been out now, I still find myself every now and then when I'm in my lowest of lows, finding myself questioning, like, what am I doing? I haven't done anything. Oh my gosh, why am I out? I need to go back in. Right? It's crazy.
All these years later, and you start, when you start those kind of thoughts, like, I want to get back in, or I want to go, you know, do that kind of stuff. It's, it does get a little bit scary when you think about that. It's like, I might be better off if I, you know, left all this other stuff and I kind of went back and did that, you know, yeah. the life that I used to
know. You know that when we sold the company, there was about 3 months after that where you're just in this weird place, right? You go from having your hand in everything to all of a sudden you have all these teams, and they don't mean bad by it, but they're getting involved in everything and they're making decisions that you're used to making. And now you have an AP team and an AR team and a finance team and a HR team, and everybody's taking different pieces. And you find yourself, there's this weird moment where you're sitting there and you're like the most depressed you've ever been. And people are like, that doesn't make any sense, Tony. You know, some people think about the money, some people about the freedom, some people about the position. They're like, oh, it's so amazing. But you're just sitting there, you're like, wow, this really sucks. Like, what have I done with my life? Like, literally, what have I done with my life? Like, now, where do I fit? I have no place. I have no home. What am I about? It took my purpose away. Like, starting the entrepreneurship, I think, is one of those awesome things that a lot of vets don't think about. I think it's one of those things that, it's one of those things that I can actually replicate the experiences you had in the core, which is what a lot of people miss, right? The camaraderie, the building, like, you know, you're, when you're out there and you're running details and you get into some shit, right? You build this bond with the people that you're in that, like, it's irreplaceable. Building a company is actually very similar. You go through all these things, right? It's a different type of dynamic. But when you go through it, you build this bond. And when somebody takes it away, all of a sudden you're like, you start questioning everything. Like, what's my purpose, you know? Right. And so that was actually, so funny enough, that was in 2017 post acquisition. I found myself in the same situation I found myself in 2005. And I found myself like contacting a bunch of recruiters and saying, I don't care, just put me back out. I don't belong here anymore. It was pretty weird. It was pretty weird and pretty gnarly.
Yeah. That's an interesting, interesting place to be, you know, after, you know, kind of finding yourself lost and not really knowing, you know, kind of what to do. And I've talked to other people too, have kind of been involved in other acquisitions and stuff, and having similar, they weren't veterans, so I don't think they were calling up recruiters at that point, but they didn't really know where they fit in the whole scheme of the organization. Like, they, you know, they went from one day running everything and being in charge of the whole show to the next day just being another piece of the puzzle of this big giant, you know, 50,000 piece puzzle or whatever, you know.
Yeah. It's funny. The Marine Corps is like, listen, devil. Like, you know, they're like, you know, I love the spirit. But this is a young man's game. I mean, I called the Navy. You know, it was bad when I'm calling the Air Force. I'm like, what do you guys need? You know? And I was like, I think you're a little old now. I'm like, no, don't tell me that.
When you call the Air Force, that's when you're hitting rock bottom. So I was reading through your blog the other day, and
I'm sorry about that.
No, I'm actually going to link to it in the show notes because there's a lot of good stuff there. But one common theme that I found in a lot of the posts that you had, and not all of it is kind of life or leadership or whatever kind of related stuff, but is. One of the themes that I found in there is that you don't really fear failing, like failure. You seem to kind of embrace the opportunity to fail, if that makes sense. Like, it's not to say that you're a failure and that you're, oh, I'm just cool with, you know, being a, you know, a dope or whatever who's not successful or whatever, because that's not what I mean at all. But I guess you don't let the setbacks that you might have get you down. And so you kind of drive through there. Like, for example, in one post you say, failing doesn't scare you, but not trying does. And then in another post, you're talking about how, success has little to do with being smart or planning well, things like that, but rather, having a high degree of stubbornness and not allowing the failure, to consume you. So stuff like kind of just goes to your mindset that you're sort of talking about, like being in the Marines and everything, and talking about how you're not really afraid to fail. And I think that is what allowed you to take a risk and take a chance on, you know, being an entrepreneur, because that's not without risk for any entrepreneur, really.
It's so weird you say that, right? Because first off, you know, I never even understood what an entrepreneur was. I think I was at a conference and someone's like, oh, you know, you're an entrepreneur. And I'm like, what is that? And they're like, well, that's what you're doing. And I had to go home and Google it and whatnot. And I was like, oh shit, I never even thought about that. I guess I am an entrepreneur. And then, I was giving another talk to a bunch of veterans and at the end I get off and they're like, oh man, that was great. And you know, I'm like, well, why'd you like that? And they're like, well, you know, that's achievable success. And I'm like, what the fuck? And I was like, what are you saying? And then I realized, I was like, well, you know, that's actually a great compliment, right? Because what I do is what you describe, which is like, you know, and I don't know what it is. My wife has said something's wrong with me, but she's like, I never, the idea of failing just doesn't cross my mind until people tell me like, do you know that this could happen? And I'm like, I recognize that it's there. I don't know if I just don't respect it. In fact, the higher the risk of a failure, the more excited I get about it. Right? Like that's just been my personality for a long time now. And that's like, if the less people can do it, the less people can accomplish something, the more I want to try to do it. And the thing though is that I'm not afraid if I don't make it, right? Like if I don't do it, I'm cool. Like for me, it was that journey. It was the work. It was the grit that's required to give it a shot and try it. Like for instance, I'm getting into off-road racing. Never off-road raced in my life. I thought it was cool. And so few people do it, and it's so rad that I was like, well, I'm going to go buy a rig, and I'm going to join a team, and I'm going to build this up, and I'm going to get in the vehicle, and I'm going to race it, right? We ended up doing really, really well, and huge, mainly because of the team and the other driver and whatnot. But for me, it's just an awesome experience. I like to push those limits. And I don't get hung up on the idea that you could fail. Like for me, it's if I fail, it's because I allow myself to fail. Like the failure are conditions in which I can control, right? Because like I said in that one article you were referencing, more than anything, more than being smart, more than anything else, it's pure willpower. One of my colleagues here at GoDaddy always says like, with enough overwhelming pressure, you can overcome anything. And I'm like, I like that a lot. and you read back, and I read some military history books and whatnot, and you kind of read back, like, what are the things that allowed guys to overcome crazy odds? Well, it's their unwillingness to quit. Like quitting just was not a thing that you allowed to happen. You must succeed. Kind of, I think Chesty once said when he was surrounded, you know, kind of like he was surrounded at all quarters. He's like, yeah, you know, this just means that we got him right where we want him, right? We can kind of go at it with them. And I'm like, that's one way to look at life. But I love it. Like,
I think it was like, you can, now we can just attack in any direction if we're surrounded.
We don't have to worry about it, right? Like, who gives a shit about tactics? Just fight.
Yeah, exactly. That's good. Yeah. So you talked a little bit about some of the other things that you're involved in, some of the philanthropic kind of work that you've been involved in. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that type of stuff, some of the organizations you might be involved in and whatnot?
Yeah, so last year at the Military Influence Conference, I met up with the Semper Canine folks. And the Semper Canine folks, they're training dogs to help veterans that need it, whether they've been wounded or whether they're going through mental illness or whatnot. And they train these dogs to support them. So I went ahead and partnered up with them. And for them, it's just mostly a donation and just making sure that they have what they need. The other group that I'm working with is the War Horses for Veterans. So over the past year and a half, 2 years, I've been kind of getting more immersed in horses. I just think that they're beautiful animals. And so I've got two partnerships going on with Sweepo Horses. It's a wild rescue for Mustangs, wild Mustangs here in the U.S. And they're trying to create a veteran program to help people that are in need, that are just struggling, kind of go through their program and using horses to facilitate that. The other group that I'm partnered with is the War Horses for Veterans out of Kansas, helping them kind of create an environment where they take combat vets or those that are struggling with PTSD specifically, whether it's first responders or combat vets, and giving them a safe, quiet space to kind of immerse themselves with the horses and kind of refine themselves and reconnect with the rest of the world. Then there's a spiritual resiliency group called the Mighty Oaks Foundation down here in Temecula. That is a spiritual resiliency for those struggling with PTSD, whether that's first responders or combat vets. And so working with those guys as well. So I don't know how I've stumbled into that. It's just become a thing that I started to do just to kind of donate and help in whatever ways I can. So I just enjoy it. I don't know.
Yeah, you're definitely involved in quite a bit as far as all of that, all these different organizations. But it's really great that there are people out there like you who are, you know, willing to support these organizations and help out the veterans who are struggling. And it seems like they're doing really good work with all of this stuff. You know, it actually kind of funny story. You're talking about all the horses and everything. When we were doing our train up to go to Afghanistan, we're in Louisiana, and they had some wild horses out there on the area that we were training in. There were just wild horses that would go roaming through, and we got to one spot in this training exercise that we were on, and we were just kind of like stopped for a little bit, and we just hear there's like this rumbling, like coming out off. In the distance. And then you just see this whole like herd of horses coming towards us, and they're not stopping, and they're just coming right towards us. And we were like, holy shit, we're about to get run over by all these horses. And it was like a pretty scary experience at that point. Cause we had like nowhere really to go. We were all like kind of like bunched up where we were at, and like we couldn't really get out of there, and they were just not going to stop. They just kept coming, but they ended up like kind of going around us, and where we were, it was very fortunate that they decided to do that, because they probably would have just ran right over us.
Like, well, we did not plan for this.
that was not on the packing list, is like, you know, what to do with the when the wild horses start coming after you. But yeah, and you were also talking about like how that grit and like the crappy situation that's going on or whatever, and you just kind of like work through it, you know, with your team or whatever, and you kind of get through, and you end up getting through it even better on the other side. In that same area that we were in, we went on a just like a training mission to just go like drive around, train the other guys, the newer guys on driving like the Humvees and other trucks that we had, and things like that. And so we had this course that we were going to drive on. It was all mapped out there. It was all, you know, laid out for us, but we didn't realize how muddy the ground was. Mm-hmm. And we ended up getting all of our trucks stuck in the mud, and we left it like 6 at night or so, and it wasn't until well after sunrise the next day that we got all of the trucks unstuck. They actually had a wrecker come out to like where we were at, and that got stuck in the mud. It was like a complete shit show. We actually, fortunately, we had axes in the back of the trucks, and we went and we just started chopping down trees to use for like leverage to get the trucks out and everything. We completely destroyed the woods there. There was like a little, actually been off base at this point, because we kind of like veered off a little bit off. And there was this little footbridge that looked like someone really dug in. They took some time to like make this thing in there. We totally destroyed that and like used the wood to put under the wheels to get the trucks out of the mud and everything. Like we destroyed that whole area. But the reason why I'm saying that is afterwards, our entire platoon was on this mission, or this, you know, training mission. And we all like got so much closer after that. Like we all came together and, you know, that kind of shared suffering and everything like that. We grinded through the suck or the blisters and the cuts and the everything else of trying to work through this problem. And we all came out so much closer. And as much as it sucked during the time, I wouldn't trade that experience for anything because of how close we became afterwards. And it really helped, especially being, you know, pre-deployment and everything. Then we deploy overseas and we're that much closer with everybody and everything like that. So it really, really helped. And I think, you know, kind of to your point earlier that you were talking about, was that you can go through this crappy situation and you can really grind and still come out better on the other side.
Yeah. And one of the things specifically that, you know, I appreciate the Corps for, I mean, it in many ways, when I got out, I love the Corps and I kind of divorced myself from it as well for whatever reasons. And I never talked much about it. I just kind of always kept it in the back of my mind. But how and what I did was based on the things that I learned specifically around leadership and how you lead, you know, teams and people and stuff like that. You know, I had to make some modifications, right? The Marine way was a little bit different, but the principles around leading from the front and being there on the front lines and when it gets tough, being the first one there. I can tell you experiences with, you know, with Sukuti where, you know, we would have really bad months where mass compromises, the teams were small and, you know, we weren't paying a lot. We were still self-funded and we were there, man. We were there together, you know, first ones on, first ones off, last ones off, kind of just there with the teams. And I know that the teams really appreciated it. Mm-hmm. That kind of servitude leadership and being there for the teams, you know, things that the Chesty, at least on our side, Marine Corps side, would always preach, the things that I leverage today in my leadership style. I haven't perfected it in any way, but it's something that they don't really teach in schools for a lot of non-military folks. And you see it in the way other teams are led.
Right.
And, you know, that's one of the things that I'm extremely grateful for is being able to take the things that I learned in the military and reapply them and continue to remind myself, what was it about? What were the principles? What was the intent? And how do people respond? Right. There's a reason that you teach these things when you're going to war. If it works in war, it can work in building a company where you're going into a different kind of war.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And there's a lot of those leadership traits that you learn in the military that sometimes you don't necessarily think about afterwards, because sometimes you might learn learn how to apply something to a very specific situation in the military, but you don't realize that it has applications elsewhere, you know, outside of the military. And, you know, running a business is a perfect example of that. You know, where, like you said, you know, being the first one in and the last one out, you know, type of thing. And, you know, the leaders eat last kind of mentality and things like that is really important when you're trying to run a business.
Absolutely. And the team see it. They see it. They appreciate it. And if they see you do that and they see you lean in, they lean in, right? I believe in this concept of like positive peer pressure. So, you know, if I really want something to get done, I could absolutely tell you to do it, or I can go do it myself. And then those people that are like, oh shit, I should probably be doing that, kind of lean in and do it with you. Right.
Right.
And the people that have the intuition to see that and respond are the people that I want to work with. Right. Those are the people that are, yes, you understand what I'm trying to get at with culture. Let's kind of lean into that together.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So I do a lot of that kind of stuff where I won't tell team members what to do. And I'll say, okay, that's great. And I'll just lean up. So say we're having a meeting and we're all sitting there and nobody's engaging. Well, if it gets to a point where we need to start taking action, I said, okay, I'll get up and I'll start taking action until somebody leans in and says, I'll do it. And they'll lean in. I was like, okay, and then I'll sit down versus saying, you get up, you lead this, right? Because I want to see the people that are going to take the initiative. I want to see the people who are tomorrow's leaders. To me, the leadership isn't defined by their role and who's the highest paid person in the room, right? It's the person that has those behavioral attributes of a leader. Those are the people that I want to move up.
Right. And realistically, I mean, this is for any business, not just, you know, your business and things like that, but you're not necessarily going to be running the ship the whole time. You know, you might have to step away. You might move on to another role or another position or another company or something like that. And where's that going to leave the company that you started, you know?
Absolutely.
And if you're not training those people who are working for you to be able to kind of run the ship and take things over, then you're basically setting it up for failure.
I couldn't agree more. That's become more evident over the years than ever before, which is, you know, I see my responsibility of ensuring that the brand is preserved long after I'm gone, whether I get hit by a bus or I leave. You know, it's about building that bench and building those leaders that will continue to drive this much farther than I ever will. Right. But yeah, that's a great point.
Yeah, absolutely. So one question I like to ask people on this show, and you can answer this any way you want. It could be funny with a joke, or you can, you know, be serious or whatever. But what is that you wish people or somebody? Sorry, what is one of the things that you wish somebody would have told you prior to you joining the military? You know, some sort of advice or something like that. And we've already, I think we've already talked, other people have already said recruiters lie and the Air Force chow is way better and things like that. So you're going to come up with something different.
What do I wish that someone would have told me before I joined the military? It was a very different time when I joined, right? It was pre-war. It was just a fundamentally different time, right? The closest war we had at the time was Desert Storm. And so I would say that I don't know if I would have appreciated it, but I would have loved to better understand the psychological impacts of being in the military. Right. It's something that we talk a lot about today. I mean, there's organizations and it's a real thing, whatever you want to call that. Right. But it is a real thing and it lasts with you for a very long time. Right. And it's difficult for people to get their heads around. There's a stigma behind it. And, you know, it can hurt you. It cannot. And it, as an individual, I don't know if I would have been mature enough to appreciate what it meant. I think I would have been naive enough to be like, what happened to me? Right.
You're right.
But I think some kind of understanding that, like, this is an investment that's going to stay with you for whether you're with them for a year or whether 5 years, whether you're 20 years, that will go a long time and you can make good of it or you can make bad of it. Right. You can let it consume you or you can help it. You can let it help you grow. Right. And I think some conversation around that would have been really good. So that when I am mature enough to appreciate it, I can go back and say, shit, I got to remember that, especially when I'm in my darkest moments. Right. So, yeah, I would say that.
Yeah. And I can imagine something like that would have been useful. Like you said, you know, after you got out and you were kind of in that rut and everything like that, to kind of think back on it and be like, okay, well, you know, I got to kick my own ass out of this rut. And, you know, how am I going to get there?
But it's a timeless advice, right? It's one of those things that applies every single time I hit a rut, which happens all the time. And even to this day, sometimes I'm still kind of getting into it. And that reminder in the back of your head could be really helpful because, you know, I know a lot of guys have not been as fortunate as myself where I was able to like recognize and pull myself out. I just think that it could be really helpful. And then again, these days, the conversation is very different. So at that time and what we were going through, that could have been very helpful. These days, everybody's talking about it. It's out there. People know it, right? It's interesting. I just hope we remember it 20 years from now.
Yeah, I mean, even the fact that you're saying it now is really good because, you know, there could be somebody who's listening to this who is like, you know, I'm thinking about joining, you know, whatever. And they could take that and then when they get out 10, 20, you know, however many years from now, you know, they can have that piece of advice with them. So it's, you know, it's still good, even though, you know, people are talking about it now. It's good to have that.
I would say like for anybody that's listening, it's more along the lines of like, look, being part of something as amazing as the US military is any military is one of those things that are going to dramatically change your life. And you just have to be physically, mentally and spiritually prepared for that, right? And understand that the things you learn can have a dramatic impact in the things that you do to this world long after you get out, right? And that's be the thing that I would probably tell people if they're thinking about joining. And then if they want examples, you dive into it. But I think that's important for people to understand and appreciate.
Absolutely. And I think that's really great advice to have. And it looks like we're kind of coming up on time here anyway, so probably a good place to wrap up. Tony, you want to maybe tell people where they can learn a little bit more about you and what you do, maybe places online that they might be able to find you?
Yeah, for sure, man. It's really easy. Just look me up on PerezBox, PerezBox. I've had that handle for a long time across a bunch of mediums. If you want to connect, just hit me up.
Awesome. All right. Thank you very much.
All right. Take care.
All right. Thanks for listening to the Drive On Podcast. If you want to check out more episodes or learn more about the show, you can visit our website, driveonpodcast.com. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Drive On Podcast.